Philippians chapter 2, verse 14 to 16. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and a perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so I may rejoice in the day of Christ that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. Paul talks about a crooked and a perverted generation. A sociologist meaning, you know, people who study new generations, the society and the new trends, he tells us few interesting things about this 21st generation. Okay, he says that the young children, people who are growing up now, and the young people, children, are very discontent, are very dissatisfied. They would, you know, they don't like anything the way it is, right? They are not happy. And that discontentment, deep discontentment within themselves, makes them resist authority and resist responsibility. And you can always see them complaining, you know. As they grow up through this life, they're always depressed, they're always discontent. It's kind of a feeling of rejection about everything around. They don't like things the way they are, never satisfied with anything. How much ever, it's not enough for them. And why are people like this? Why is the new generation like this? And the sociologist gives a very interesting reason. You know, he says the reason this generation has become like this is because of small families. Small families. Nowadays, you know, because of the population growth, there was a statement earlier, hum do, hamare do, right? We too and ours too. That was the slogan. And it started in, I think, 19th century, and then now it is actually becoming Am do amara ek, right? So the families are becoming smaller and smaller. Most families, you have maximum two children, and then it's one child. So one or two children, they become the center of attention in that family. And so they become selfish, they don't learn the good virtues of sharing and all that. They become proud, materialistic, and self-indulgent children. So morning comes, the mother wakes up and says, "Dear, what will you have for breakfast? Do you want idli? Do you want dosa? You want a burger? You want sandwich?" So the child can order. So the child orders what it wants, and it learns to order every time. You know, lunch, dinner, this is what I want for dinner, this is what... You know, we sometimes speak to mother and say, "Why do you do that? Can't you cook something healthy and give?" "Yes, I can cook all the healthy and give, but this child will not eat. So it'll all become waste. As well, let me ask the child and cook so what he will eat." And so the mother gets used to providing whatever the child orders, and the same with the dress, okay? They don't like that color, this color, so dear, what color do you like? So the mother buys that color, that fashion, that dress. So they choose every time. They choose, right? Even the timing of the food, right? What time you want to eat? 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whatever time the mother will provide dinner. So mother prepares that. On top of that, they keep buying things for those children, whatever they are. Think about the old families, right? Parents used to have 3 or 4 children at that time. And whether you like it or no, you will get a bag different morning, and that's all you get to eat, right? You just carry that and eat. Those times the family dinner would be at 8 p.m. so all have to come and eat. If you don't come on time, you will not get some of the items of the dinner, right? Because in that time, the big family, and we don't cook a lot. It was a middle class, frugality was practiced, right? You don't cook a lot, you be very frugal, careful, economical, and that That scenario, one child says, I don't like this. Okay, the next child, there are three or four children. The next child says, very good, no problem, I will take it and eat it. So, you know, nobody will say, no, I don't like. So, because everything that gets cooked gets eaten. So nobody complains at that time. See, difference is where you have the small family. The family bends to the child. And very early on, the child knows that the society, the child thinks that the society, my surrounding will bend to me. If I put the enough pressure, if I stubborn, the society will bend to me. That's the mindset they grow up with. Whereas in a large family, the child will bend to the environment. Okay? So the sociologist says the new generation of young people who grow up in this kind of home and system, right? They, when they come out, they struggle. It's all child-centered parenting now. Isn't that the issue? I think about this. I think I can relate to what he's saying. 20, 30 years ago, we all lived in families where, you know, we just hate what was given to us. You know, we dressed up whatever our parents brought. You know, it was always whatever was cooked. Even now, my, you know, you can ask my wife, you know, whatever they cook in my house, I will eat. I don't demand, I don't, you know, sometimes when it is more simple, you know, it reminds me of olden days and I enjoy it. Right? I don't demand anything because we were brought up in that kind of big families where, you know, it was frugality was practiced. Whatever was there, we will eat. But the reverse is true now. Children who grow up this kind of environment where they control the family, they struggle a lot in the outside world. They don't want to go to work. They don't want to be under a system because there they have to follow some rules. No one in the work will come and say, dear child, dear employee, what time you want to come to work? What is the work that you want to do? What time you want to have breakfast? What time you want to have meet? No, nobody will ask. This is the work. This is the timing. And this is the break timing, and this is the canteen. Whatever is given in the canteen, you like this time, you like this work, come. Otherwise, get lost. You don't have a job here. Today's generation doesn't like that. Right? They don't want to take responsibility. They don't want to be committed. They don't realize the value of loyalty. They don't realize of years of hard work and little by little save and make a big wealth. They don't want all that. They want a quicker scheme. Because, you know, you ask such kids, what do you want to become when they grow up? It's all, I'm quoting the psychologist. He's saying they will be very confused. Right? You ask them, young people, what do you want? They'll be very confused. Reason is, they're trying to postpone responsibility. They're trying to postpone commitment. Because responsibility means you have to conform and to a system. Right? Whereas from the childhood you've lived and grown up with absolute freedom where you, you know, eat what you want, wear what you want, ask what you want, you get all you want. The system and the environment was bending for you. As you grow, breed a young generation who are irresponsible, they grow up in this environment where they learn to control everything. You know, they grow up with a dream thinking the outside world will bend to them. That's the dream that they grow up with. And he says after college, they end up wasting 10 to 20 years to realize that's not the reality. The world will not bend to them. They'll have to learn to bend to the world. And when they go out, that's when they learn. And they end up wasting 10 to 20 years, imagine, to learn that. Because we don't train them at home. And then they become 35 and 40, they don't learn any talent, they don't develop anything, prepare themselves for the world. And whatever earnings they make, they buy gadgets and toys and all kinds of bikes and all that. They don't achieve anything worthwhile. And what happens? You have a young generation who's moody, who's depressed, who's discontent all the time and grumbling all the time because the system doesn't bend for them. I think he's right in many ways. Don't you think? Right? We may be allowing our families to run with grumbling, discontent children. Nothing ever is enough. I know there are two families, you know, who like our church, you know, they say, you know, this, and they go to, they went to a very, very wrong church. I asked them, why? You know the truth, you know, because our children don't like your church. Think about a family, you know, controlled by children. They like church where there is dance, where there is kids, and very entertaining church. And now the children are in a horrible state, you know, because they've never been trained to hear the truth and grow by the truth. An horrible state, they're suffering. You allow the children to rule your family. This is the consequence. Now the children control the family. So to make things worse, if you grow up with parents who are always grumbling, right? The children can become uncontrollable. Grumbling is very contagious, right? If your parents are grumbling and you grow up around grandparents and parents are always grumbling, the children will become 10 times more grumbling children, complaining. And it's a disease, right? It's not because we lack facilities. Grumbling is not with just people who are poor. You know, actually, the more people have, the more facilities they have, the more they become discontent and become grumbling. That's what he says. So I realize all this introduction is to tell that I'm going to stand before this generation and preach something completely opposite to what this generation is. I realize before this grumbling generation, I want to preach God's word today, which commands in verse 14, do all things without grumbling and disputing. This is God's call to us as saved people. He calls us to reverse this trend. We've been called in this perverted generation not to go along with the generation, but to reverse this trend. But sadly, what do we do when Christians are grumbling? What do we do when the Christians are going with the flow? So today I want to show you the sinfulness of grumbling. The terrible, terrible sinfulness of grumbling. Because unless we see the seriousness of it, right, we will never repent and never take that seriously and change. And we may never be a witness in this generation. So I think it's very urgent as we partake, as we plan to partake in the Lord's Supper today, may the Lord open our eyes and help us to see that this is the devil's poison. Just like the Israelites who were bitten by the snakes and they were poisoned in their system. But when they looked at the serpent on the cross that Moses erected, they were delivered from that poison. So similarly, as we come and remember the Lord's table, first of all, let's recognize the poison that is filled in our system so that we can go to the cross with all our needs. Remember the context. After telling the Philippians that work out your salvation with fear and trembling. And he said in verse 13, the great motivation for us to work out the salvation with fear and trembling is God is working in us both to will and to work. And to do is good pleasure. And one of the practical ways that we work out our salvation in fear and trembling, we learn to do all things without grumbling. See how practical it is? Oh, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Okay, Pastor, I will pray. I will pray every day. I will start reading. No, Paul says, this is how you work out your salvation. All things that you do as a Christian, whatever things that you do as a Christian, learn to do it without grumbling, without complaining or disputing. He gives the command in verse 14 and gives three marvelous practical reasons why we shouldn't grumble in verse 15 and 16. Today I think we will have the time only to understand the command. The command comes in a present imperative tone, meaning it's not once in a while. It's not on a Sunday that you don't complain a lot. No, you have to do all things continuously without complaining or disputing. What is the scope of the command? All things. No, there are a few things you have to grumble. No. He says all things. Everything that you do in your life. And there are two key words. Let's understand that. Murmuring, grumbling, and disputing. Right? What are those? I think the different translation has different words: murmuring, grumbling, complaining. And I was looking at the original word, it was very funny. Gugusmas. No, I think the sound itself tells us a lot of things. It's like a grouchy, grumbling, attitude. Attitude that it's an expression of discontent. You're not happy with the things that they are. And what do? You kind of mutter in a low tone, right? It's internal. What is this? I'm not upset with this. No, you don't express it very vocally. Grumbling is mostly under the breath. Your face, maybe we can see it in your face. You kind of grumble. You're discontent with the situation or with the people around you. It's actually a discontent with the providence of God. Right? Where the providence of God has placed you in a certain situation among certain people and you don't like it. It's an attitude. It can't be clearly seen outside. It's mostly within ourselves, right? But it doesn't stop there. It goes to the next word, and the next word is that grumbling, that discontent, that muttering, that mumbling results in, what is the next word? Disputing. Disputing. Very interesting. If you look at all the translation, there are four or five words being used. When you have that kind of different words used, you'll have to understand the original as different shapes. Some translations say disputing, some say arguing, some say questioning, some say reasoning and deliberation. Without any reasoning, without any deliberation, and I was trying to do a word study, I think it seems there are two shapes for this. There is an internal shade and there is an external expression. The internal shade is reasoning. It means mentally you are discontent about a situation. Think about it. The heart is discontent and it's an emotion. And you know what? The mind comes to the help of the heart and gives all kinds of reasons for that. There is a reasoning that goes on. The word reasoning is a word, it's used in a gymnastics of mind. You know what gymnastics? You've seen gymnastics, people bend and do all kinds of things, right? And the mind, that's the gymnastics itself. To help the heart. The heart is discontent. And the mind, it bends and curves and forward moves, backwards. Why? To bring up all kinds of reasons. Justifiable reasons for my discontent. That's reasoning, right? Our Lord in Matthew 15:19 said, out of the heart, the first thing he said, evil heart, comes evil reasoning. Reasoning, actings of the mind. Our mind is so sharp, under the influence of this deceptive heart, the heart which is not happy. Maybe it is covetousness, maybe it is lust, sometimes it is not happy. And the mind comes up with various justifications for that. Various reasons, which may seem very reasonable. Yeah, you should grumble. You should complain. You should cry. Because all these reasons, it seems right to us. Evil reasonings, the Lord says. When the heart is under the influence of this unbelief and dissatisfaction, the mind comes with all its gymnastics to help the heart express that discontent in all kinds of justifiable reasons. You understand the depth of these words? Right? For what the unbelief and the dissatisfaction of the heart is dictating something, and the mind comes with all kinds of logical reasons. And Paul says in Romans, when people are filled with unbelief of God's providence, their hearts are darkened and their mind come up with vain reasoning. It's all vain reasoning. Thinking they are wise, they become fools with these vain reasonings. So this is internal reasoning. The mind comes with all kinds of gymnastics. And finally, it comes with the outward expression. It is disputing. Arguing. Right? The word again is dialogue, from which we get the dialogue word. Right? It means you question, you criticize, you find fault. the discontent of the heart results in an intellectual argument, intellectual debate. Murmuring is again an internal emotion. It's a belly burning and aching that you are not happy. You feel that unhappiness, and the disputing is more of an intellectual expression. Mind helps you with all kinds of reasons, and you come up and say, I'm not happy because these are the reasons. You come up with an argument and a dialogue. So your murmuring leads to disputing. Do you see that? You know, that your murmuring, your discontent in heart, mind works with all, it helps, the mind helps your heart to express that with all kinds of justifications. So you grumble with people, you grumble with people, and you also end up grumbling against God's providence. You want to argue with God, why the things the way they are. You are, why is the circumstances like this? Why is my family like this? Why is my job? Why is my financial situation, my singleness? Why God? Why? Arguing with God out of discontent and debating with God because you got a better idea. You have a better way of doing things. So the first word is more of an emotional, internal, guttural feeling. And the next word is more of an external, intellectual reasoning that comes out with words. Disputing, arguing. You argue. You come up with reasons. You say you're not happy because of all this. No, that's what it means. I thought that was very deep. I don't know if you followed me in all my word study. I think it's very, very important. We understand. So, to show you the sinfulness of murmuring, what I want to do you is give you a meaning, right, of what murmuring is, and then illustrate that in the with Bible history. Okay? How the scripture validates it. What is grumbling? If you ask me in simple terms, I think it's a reaction. Either this starts with whispering, mumbling within ourselves, and leads to arguing with others and about God, about the situation. Right? It starts with an emotion, you are not happy with the emotion, and then you start arguing and complaining about the situation. It is a reaction especially to difficult situation, a pressing difficult situation in which God has sovereignly placed you. It's not just a superficial problem. It is a sign of a deep disease, right? And it's a symptom of a deep-rooted disease. What are those diseases? There are two things I want to highlight. It has two features. One, it comes from a heart of unbelief in the providential working of God. Who will murmur? It comes from a heart that does not believe in the God's providential purposes and plans. You don't believe that God is sovereign. You don't believe that God has placed me in a certain situation and He is working. You don't believe that. It is from such a heart murmuring comes. In simple words, it comes from a heart that truly doesn't believe how big God is. Right? How sovereign God is. And then, listen, grumbling is an attack on all the attributes of God. You know why God sees grumbling as a horrible sin? In your grumbling, you attack all the attributes of God. Let me show you that. That's my definition, right? Secondly, it comes from a person who never ever realized the depravity of his own heart. First of all, you never realize how big God is. Secondly, you never realize how sinful you are. We may say we are all sinners, we are all reformed, we know about total depravity, but when you grumble, you betray your heart, right? You reveal that you have a proud, unhumbled heart. That's what your grumbling shows. Your heart has never been humbled by the reality of your sinfulness. You are unwilling to submit to the providential purpose and the plan of God. Such a proud, blind heart, failing to see its spiritual need, that God has to sanctify me, God has to correct me, I am a depraved person, thinks that everything in life should be best for it. Right? It deserves the best. I deserve all the good things in life, nothing difficult or bad thing should happen in my life. That kind of proud heart, if you have that kind of proud heart, you don't realize your sinfulness, everything, every bad, difficult situation, you will end up grumbling. Right? The slightest difficulty, your proud heart cannot bear. It will end up grumbling. Inevitably, all this, you will grumble at adversity. Something goes wrong. Somebody rubs you, you will grumble. You can't help it because that's your heart. Any difficulty or any need in life, the reaction will be grumbling. It shows that you never had a true sense of sin. You've never been humbled. So, there are two things. Remember this. Two things it reveals about a person, a grumbling person. First of all, he doesn't know how sovereignly big God is. So he attacks God by his grumbling. Secondly, he's never realized the true sense of his heart, true sinfulness of his heart, and never realized his true need. Okay? So such a heart, whatever it may see, whatever it, you may be here like that with such a heart, you may hear all this sermon. If even if God takes you and shows you all the 10 plagues that happened in Egypt, God leads you through the sea, in the middle of the sea, and shows you all that wonders, right? Until your heart believes how big God is, until you realize the sinfulness of a heart, and repent and submit, you will never stop grumbling. How much ever God blesses you with, how much ever blessing, how much ever miracles that God does to you, how much ever God blesses you richly, you will never stop grumbling. You may think this is normal, but Bible shows this is a wicked sin. If you don't repent, continuing in grumbling has terrible, terrible consequences. You may have asked, I'm grumbling about only my parents, only about my husband, only about my wife situation. No, no, no. It is God who put you in that situation. It is God's providence that has put you in the midst of those people. When you grumble against people, when you grumble against situations, you are actually grumbling against God. You are attacking the attributes of God. Let me show you that. Let me show you from the Bible. Where did I get all this? I didn't make it up. I looked at, I went through the scriptures and came up with all these definitions. When we hear about grumbling, the number one illustration that comes to our mind is none other than the Israelites, right? Let me quickly take you through the survey. I want you to just quickly run through your verses. I will show you that we know that God delivered them from the Egypt. He did the marvelous 10 plagues in the front of their eyes and humbled that Pharaoh's heart, right, and brought them out of the Egypt. They all should have reached the blessed land, promised land. But something happened on the way. While lakhs and lakhs of women and men and children left Egypt, how many of them actually landed up in the promised land? Two. Do you know that? Two. Only two. What happened to the rest? They missed entering the promised land. Only two, and the children of that, all those people ended up landing. The repeated sin was murmuring, grumbling. They kept repeating this because they thought it's not a big sin. Right? They thought it's not a, and they faced very terrible consequences because of sin. Let's just quickly run through. You may want to turn to Exodus 14. We find them out of Egypt. They have not yet crossed the Red Sea. And we read in verse 11, there are mountains at both sides, the Red Sea in front of them, and the Pharaoh's army is following them, and look at what they say. And they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, you have taken us away to die in the wilderness. Why have you so dwelt with us to bring us up out of the Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. This is the grumbling language. If you want to learn that, you can learn from there. The terrible, yes, it's a terrible situation. The sea and the mountains next to each other, where can they run? The Egyptians are pursuing them. Yes, it's terrible, but they should have, in that terrible situation, they should have pleaded with God. And asked, because God has shown them wonders, they should have pleaded. But look at the problem. God did not see. They should have pleaded, look at the mocking, murmuring reasoning, evil reasoning. Look at that. What do they say? Is it because there were no graves in Egypt? You brought us to die in the wilderness? What is that? Do you see that mocking, insulting language? It's a grumbling language. Right? Yeah, you are in a difficulty. Why don't you pray to God? God will help you. No, no, no. Because there were no graves in Egypt, you brought us here to die? Evil reasoning. God saw this as a big sin. Why? Two reasons. They did not believe God's attributes. Right? Secondly, they didn't realize their need. Because God delivered them with all that mighty display of power. Yes, they did not have the scriptures, but God told them that He is almighty, that He can humble any Pharaoh, He can manage any impossible situation. God did show them. And they did not believe that. God brought them out. And secondly, you know, they did not believe because God is bringing them out and He wants to use them to conquer the promised land. But they are unbelieving, they are depraved, and He wants to teach them the first lesson of faith. And it is this pillar of fire that has brought them here. He has led them here for a purpose. He wants to teach them an important, valuable lesson of faith. And He puts them in a pressurized environment. And what do? Because they don't believe the power of God, they don't realize the need of their heart, they grumble. Right? They grumble. God was patient with them. He didn't punish them immediately. And He did another wonderful miracle, amazing miracle. Parting the Red Sea. Imagine walking in the middle of two walls of water. In the depths of the sea, they had that experience. And they should have trusted God at least now, right? That God has a purpose, that He can do anything. What happens next? Very next chapter. They cross the other side. Very next chapter. Look at chapter 15, verse 23. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name it was called Marah. Name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? Just a vivid memory. Just this couple of days, they walked in the middle of the sea with the water walls in two sides. It is still fresh in their mind. And now they don't have water. As soon as they see a need, a difficulty, they start grumbling. They start grumbling. They face a problem this side of the sea. They murmured. They dare not complain against God. So it says that they complained against Moses. They blame Moses for their problem. Okay? That God gives them the water. We know that. In fact, He named that place Marah to make them remember that God can change any situation. Right? He named that place. He gives them food. Will they keep quiet now? Chapter 16, verse 1 and 2. They journeyed from Elim. All the congregation of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, verse 2. The whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we had died in the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. You see this grumbling? In Exodus 14, they grumbled about a difficult situation. Right? The sea in front of them. In 15 and 16, it's the discontent about the provision of God. It's not a difficult situation now. It's not a life-threatening situation. But water and food. Okay, in last chapter, if you actually look at end of chapter 15, God took them to a place called Elim, where there were 12 springs of water. Imagine springs of fresh springs and palm trees. They had feasted there for days, enjoyed really food. But nothing is enough for a how much ever God gives them, they will never be satisfied. And now there is an expansion of the discontent. You have water, you have food, and God protects you. What else do you need? There is an expansion of discontent. Now they want meat. You see that? We remember the pots of boiled meat it was in Egypt. Now Egypt seems better for them with all the bitter bondage. That's not the reality. You take them back to Egypt, they will grumble there also. Right? So God patiently provides them, again sends them manna. And chapter 17, the grumbling breaks out against the authority, God constituted authority. Chapter 17:3, the people thirsted there for water, and people complained against Moses and said, "Why is it that you brought us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" Then Moses tells them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord? He is the one, it's not me. He is the one that brought you here. He is the one that is leading you. You are testing the Lord. You may be justifying saying you are complaining against me." And in fact, the complaint was so intense. Just look at what Moses is saying. End of the verse was 4. Moses cried out to the Lord saying, "What shall I do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me." They've come to Moses, they're holding his shirt, and they're about to look at, can you see the expression in their faces? They were so angry and intensely angry with Moses. They were even about to kill Moses. He goes and complains to God, "They will kill me." And mind you, this grumbling and this anger, they may justify, "We showed it to Moses," but they're actually showing it against God. Right? Remember, it was the pillar of fire and cloud that was leading them. They know it is God who is bringing us in certain situations. They know it is God who is leading, and He may have a purpose. It was not Moses, it was a direct attack on the wisdom of God, the attributes of God. They couldn't catch hold of God in their hands, right? They dare not do that. So in their evil reasonings, they catch hold of Moses, right? "Why did you bring us into this situation?" The people, this kind of people with a heart, proud heart that never realized the depravity of the heart, never believes God, will always grumble. Always grumble at adversity. Small difficulty, you will grumble. It kept on going in chapter 11, Numbers 11, you can, the other book. Now the people complained, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it and His anger was arose. So the fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed them in the outskirts. Now the Lord lost patience. He started killing them. You want to know how God feels about murmuring? God killed people. God would have burnt the entire camp. But Moses ran and intervened and pleaded with God. And then verse 4, the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. It's never happy, never enough. There is manna, there is protection, there is food. No, no, no. The children of Israel also wept again, saying, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumber, the melon, the leaves, the onion, the garlic. Now our whole being is dried up. There is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes." Look at this. Can you see the extension of the discount? It keeps growing. It will never be satisfied. Nothing is enough for them. And they shall say it, you know, then you know what God does? He hears this and he's had enough. And then he tells in verse 18, you know, "Okay, bring them tomorrow. I will give them meat." They are crying for meat. "I will give them meat. Not for one day, 2 days, 1 month I will give them." And you know, God is so angry. Verse 20, he says, "For a whole month until it comes out of their nose and it becomes loathsome to them. You are crying for meat, I will give you meat and meat and meat so that it comes out of your ears and nose, because you have despised the Lord who is among you and have wept before Him saying, 'Why did we ever come out of Egypt?'" And people, you know what God did? People, then God sends them the quails and they stay all night, they collect all the quails, they run to their houses, probably make all kinds of meals, and they take that meat. Imagine how anger this must be created in God, right? Verse 33 says, "The meat was still between their teeth and it was chewed." Before it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord arose against the people. The Lord struck the people with great plague. Imagine God getting so angry for meat, and God gave them the meat and they prepared them. They sat, and before they could chew, they put it in their mouth, before they could chew, God sent a plague and killed most of them. Day after day it went on like this. Ultimately, in chapter 13 and 14, they reached the border of the promised land. Think of it, the promised land which their forefathers yearned for 400 years. Abraham wanted to go there. Isaac and Jacob and Joseph were so earnest. He said, "Don't bury me here. My bones, you keep it till you go to that land. I want to be buried there." And this nation has the, this generation has the privilege of entering that land. Will they enter? They missed it. 40 days they reached there. They could have just gone into that land and inherited. What happens? They send 12 spies into that land. The spies come with an evil report. In their unbelief, they said, "Yeah, the land is great, but it's all fortified and the men are like giants. We are like grasshoppers before them. We can't go. We will fail. We will fail. We can't defeat them." And that report is enough for these people. Mm-hmm. The 12 made the whole nation grumble. Just the 12. Like I said, grumbling is a contagious disease. Right? One, two person in the house start grumbling, the whole church will start grumbling. That's how it is. It's a very infectious. Israelites already grumbling, so it was not enough. They said, "Oh, we and all our wives and children will die in the wilderness. Our bodies will be scattered in the wilderness." They said, "Let's go back to Egypt." You know what God did? Verse 14, chapter 14, verse 37 in Numbers. The very men who brought the evil report, God killed them with a plague. You want to know what God thinks about grumblers? He killed them. He killed them for spreading discontent. You know what he did to those Israelites? Chapter 14, 26. The Lord spoke, "And how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who complain against me? I have heard the complaints of these children that make against me. Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so will I do." You grumble? You grumble that all our bodies will be scattered in the wilderness? That we will never be able to enter the promised land? Okay, just as you have grumbled, I will do for you. Whatever you grumbled, no? That's what I'm going to do for you. Your carcasses, your bodies, dead bodies that you complained against me shall fall in the wilderness. All of you are numbered. Everybody less than 20, you will all die in the wilderness. I think that says a lot. God says, "I'll kill you, the whole generation. You will never come into the promised land." And he did it. He did it. He led them through the wilderness, showed them the 10 plagues, led them through the sea, and saw all the wonders of the Lord, miracles of the Lord. They lost the great blessing at the border because of their grumbling. God didn't allow them to enter the land. You know what he did? He made them roam the wilderness for 40 years. Till everybody died and their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. How angry must God be? Why did God do this? Wilderness, and only when the last person of their generation died, he took their children into the Canaan. Wow. Do you see how seriously God sees this grumbling? The reason I took all this time to show you, you know, how seriously God, do you see the point where what sin above all other sins, that generation lost the blessing of God, that angered God? It was the sin of murmuring. It was the sin of discontent of the providence of God expressed in mumbling, grumbling and complaining. The summary statement comes in Psalm 106. 24, it says, "They despised the pleasant land, they did not believe his word, and grumbled in their tents, and did not heed the voice of. Therefore he raised his hand in an oath against them to overthrow them in the wilderness." In the wilderness, above all the sins,
which is the sin that made God take an oath on him. He said, I promise that none of them will enter the promised land. Which is that sin? It is the sin of murmur. I hope you begin to feel the tremendous seriousness of this sin. Right? It's all written for us. It's not a minor weakness. It's not that everybody does. No. Look at how God sees this. Like I said, grumbling. I hope you can see from all these incidences, right? The explanation, all these incidences, the explanation that I gave you. In every situation, what did the Israelites do? There was a living God in their midst. God was able to meet their needs. They know that He can meet their needs. He's shown them that He can meet their needs. And what did their unbelieving heart do? Murmuring and attacking all the attributes of God. Their murmur said, their heart said, the circumstances are bigger than God. And so they attacked the omnipotence of God. The situation is unknown to God. They attacked the omniscience of God. Oh, we don't have water. We don't have that problem. God doesn't care for us. He doesn't care about all this. They attacked the love of God. The mercy, sympathetic love of God. All those things are an attack on the fundamental attributes of God. Do you see that? In fact, they attack even the livingness of God. You grumble as if God is dead. You grumble as if God is not there. What is your religion talking about? Right? Your grumbling actually shows that God is dead. You attack on all the attributes of God. His omnipotence, His omniscience, His love, His mercy, His election, His sovereign purpose in working in your life. You don't attack on all that. If grumbling comes from the heart of unbelief in the providential purposes of God. Secondly, grumbling comes from a heart that has never realized the need of its depraved heart. Right? It's never realized. Think everything, they should have the best. That's what they thought. Everything should be right because we are all perfect. We're all perfect. It says that, you know, that they've never seen. See, such a heart, whatever it may see, like I said, it may see the 10 plagues of Egypt. You know, it may see all the wonders of God. It may, even in the front of its own eyes, even if the sea is departed, when there is a small problem that comes, small need that arises, it will never stop grumbling. The problem is with the heart. Do you see it's a deep-rooted problem? It's not just a weakness that everybody grumbles, I also grumble. It shows a deep-rooted heart, spiritual disease. Oh, no, 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 I'm grumbling only about my parents. I'm grumbling about the circumstance. I'm grumbling about, no, 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 God. It is God's providence who put you in that circumstance. And all that grumbling you do, it's done against the attributes of God. And you are angering God again and again. Oh, may God help us to see the sinfulness of grumbling. We may think it's a normal, but God sees it as a wicked sin. Wicked sin. What terrible consequences they face, right? I also said that grumbling will result in terrible consequences. For each of you, you think grumbling will not result in anything? No, it will result in terrible consequences in your life. As we come to communion, let me read Paul's warning to the New Testament believers. Look at what he says. Oh, no, 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 I come to communion, no terrible consequences for me. No, 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 look at what 1 Corinthians 10, you want to turn to that? Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into the Moses in the cloud and the sea, all ate the same spiritual food, all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. Yeah, we are all coming to the communion. We are all taking part in the, we are all were baptized, we are all coming to the church, we are all taking part in the communion. Verse 5. But with most of them God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Don't think just because you come to communion, because you are a church member, God will be very pleased. No. Why? Look at the example. For these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Why did I take all the time to take you through that history? Those are written for our example. That if we follow the same thing, our end also will be like that. And do not become idolaters as some of them were, as it is written, people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Verse 10, nor grumble, complain, mumble, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things were written to them as examples. They were written for our instruction, admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Now therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed. Now we think God, when we think God takes it lightly, God hates it. Right? If you want to know how serious God is, God killed people for it. Killed people for grumbling. He didn't allow even his chosen people to enter the land of Israel because of grumbling. Didn't even provide them a proper burial. Can you imagine how angry must God be? Their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Is there a worst way God can show his anger? Paul says he did it to them, he killed them in the wilderness, so that it becomes a warning and example for you. You live in the last age. You don't follow them, you don't grumble like them. It's a serious sin. In fact, that sin itself, think about it, I was thinking while I was sleeping. That angers God. Why does it anger God a lot? I think another reason is, it's not only a heinous sin in the sight of God, this itself, but this is the mother of all sins. Think about it. It's the mother of all temptations and sins. What is the temptation? Why do temptations come? Why do sins come in our life? Take from Eden. How did it start? Eve started with a temptation because she became discontent with God's providence. He said, don't eat that fruit. She was not happy with that. Devil caused that dissatisfaction. Cain, he killed his brother murderously. Why? Because he was not happy that God didn't accept, and he murmured. His face was murmuring. He was murmuring within him. Right? And you can trace every temptation in your life. Why does it come? Your lust and adultery, why does it come? It's because you're not happy with your singleness. The God has placed you. You're not happy with your marriage relationship. God has placed you, and then you end up sinning. Why do financial problems, when our gains come, problems, right? You become covetous. Right? You become covetous. God says, yeah, you want to become prosperous, work hard. God allows that. Work hard, work for years and earn and become rich. But you know, you become covetous. You become very discontent. You want to a quick rich scheme you want. You will become like Judas. Why did Judas sin? He was discontent. He started grumbling. Do you see that? When the perfume was poured on the Lord, he started grumbling. Why did we pour all this? He could have given it to poor. But he was a robber. You can trace every sin. It takes some time. And trace, why do I sin this? It always starts with discontent. And that discontent is nothing but the poison the devil injects into you. If he wants to make you disobedient to God, if he wants to tempt you into any sin, the first poison he injects into you is discontent. That's where it starts. That's why the devil is like a roaring lion, and that's why I think God hates it. From our side, we may see in our blindness, in our own depravity, we think we deserve the best. I can't be treated like this. From God's perspective, who's absolutely sovereign and independent, he thinks that you, the only thing that you deserve is a eternal hell, where there shouldn't be a drop of water. And that way in Lamentations 3:39, he says, why should a living man complain? He says, your living itself is the greatest mercy and luxury. You should be burning in hell, according to me, from my sight. And in for you, depraved fellow, I have given you all these blessings. Instead of thanking me, you complain? That angers me a lot. That angers me a lot. Just like those people, we need to be trained to live by faith. We need to be sanctified. So much work needs to be done in our life. Don't you agree? When you know your heart, you know who you are. You know that how much need you have for sanctification. Right? When you realize that, then God puts you in difficult circumstances, in needs, in the several vestitudes of your life, and you, as you journey towards heaven, why does He take you through that circumstance? He's preparing you for heaven. He's increasing your faith. He's taking you through various circumstances. You don't recognize your need. You don't recognize the attributes of God. What do? Your heart grumbles, and that makes God angry. He's leading us like, just like He led them through the pillar of fire and pillar of cloud every step. I hope that makes you realize today the sinfulness of murmuring. I told you all this in a negative way. Next week, we will look at Paul's three marvelous positive reasons why we should not grumble. In fact, he makes it very clear, if we don't repent of this sin and change, we can never be a witness for a gospel in this life, ever, if we are a complaining people. This crooked and the dark complaining world, we can never be a witness if we are a complaining people. Okay, we'll see that next week. Let me conclude with few practical applications. Imagine what would happen if every member in the family, I know in English service we don't have too many families, in every member in our family takes the sin of grumbling seriously. I will tell you, our heaven, our homes will become like heaven. Imagine, right? We just stop grumbling in the house. You will see such a wonderful environment in the house. Husbands, can we apply it to husbands? God says, I have placed you, this woman, in your life. I command you to love this woman as Christ loved the church, who gave Himself, who gave His pride, who gave His ego, who gave His body, soul, and sacrificially loved her. You have to nourish and cherish her. You have to study her. And you have to live with her with discernment. How the husbands fulfill this responsibility? You know what husbands do? God, if God would have knew my life, my wife, He wouldn't have given this command. Look at the evil reasoning. You know, our mind supports, oh, God may not know my situation. She doesn't know. God could have, I've heard one husband, Pastor, I can love any other woman except my wife. If God who gave you the command, what do you say? You're attacking God. God who gave you the command, you're saying that God did not have the providential sense to give you the right woman. Isn't it? You're murmuring, you're grumbling. That are evil reasons. It's a complaint against the providence of God who brought this particular woman into your life and not other women. God knew all about your wife. When He told you the command, love your wife as Christ loved. Yeah, she may not be lovable. Neither are you lovable when God loved you. Neither is the church lovable when Christ loved the church. What evil reasoning we bring, right? That's the standard. He nurtures just like, if what if Christ said, I have husband's complaint. This is all evil reasoning complaint. Pastor, how many times can I put up? How many times can I love? I am fed up loving her. I want to stop loving her. I told, what if Christ says that to you? Thank God He doesn't say that. If He says, I am fed up forgiving you, I am fed up bearing with you, I am fed up loving you, I can't put up with you anymore. Oh, we have done, right? So what do? He sees it all. Our duty is very clear as husbands. Do it without grumbling, evil reasoning. Right? I don't feel like loving. Oh, no. That's your duty. Right where she is, right where God has brought you. Okay? Remember, that is how you work out your salvation with fear and trembling. That's how you work out your salvation. There's no point in giving all the speech and doing all that thing outside and saying you're a godly man. No, you work out your salvation with fear and trembling in your relationships, in your family.
Pastor God, why Pastor God keeps doing this? I was talking to husband and so I was bringing up all this. You know, God in his wise providence, his great goal of marriage. You know, what is the great goal of marriage? I think Paul Washer emphasizes this often. It is to make us like Christ. How will we become like Christ if we had a perfect wife? How will we become like Christ if we had a perfect husband? No. The great purpose of bringing this man or this unlovable woman into our life is to make us like Christ. Right? What about you, wife? Do you say, Pastor, when my husband loves me like Christ, then I will submit to him. You have a condition. Nowhere in the Bible it says it's evil reasoning. It's your evil reasoning. You put up a standard. When he is good, I will obey him. When I think he is right, I will obey him. When I feel like, when it is convenient. No, those are all evil reasonings. As long as he doesn't command you to disobey the word, you will have to obey him. And obey him without grumbling or disputing. Do all things. And what about children? Are you obeying your parents when it is convenient to you? You don't understand. Oh, you don't understand. Pastor, if God knew my parents, he wouldn't have given this command. God knew all that. God knew the providence, right? You don't know how they treat me. You don't know how they do it, you know. Obey your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise. With a promise. See, it is God's good and wise providence that selected them to be a parent, right? A child who has any kind of wisdom in him, he recognizes that God has created me for a purpose. He has created me for a purpose, and to mold me for a purpose, he has put these parents as instruments of molding in my life. I will submit to him because through this providential molding that I am going to accomplish the great purposes of God. Yeah, they may be unreasonable sometimes. It may be, but children, God says, do all things. Yes, I will submit till I am 18. And let's see who makes me submit after I am 18. That's grumbling, right? It's a horrible sin. That's not submission. That's arrogant sin. Because you don't have any choice to submit. Right? There are children like that who don't have any choice. You know, God may judge you for that. Do it without grumbling or disputing. Obey your parents. Because the blessings, how will God bless you? Will God bless you because you submit to them grumbling and disputing? Or because you don't have any choice till you are 18? So you submit, will that bring blessing to you? It will bring only curse to you. You submit without grumbling or disputing. That's what brings blessing. As we partake, Lord, hope God can help you. As you go next week, there are two suggestions I want to leave you with. Just watch your life. Just watch your life. Okay? First step, coming through the week, just watch how many times you grumble about circumstances. I was trying to do this for over a month. I will tell you what will happen. You will find that it is the way of life. You will recognize as never before that every hour you grumble. And every time you grumble, it's every time a small thing comes in your life, small adversity, small need, something goes wrong, you grumble. You will recognize that's a dominant character of your being. And you may get discouraged. And it may overwhelm you and say, I will never be able to stop this sin. But do not be discouraged. Christ died for us, you know, to atone for this kind of sin, right? Even as we come, he not only died to forgive and cleanse us from those sins, but he died to purchase sanctification for us, right? He gives us the grace to overcome. And remember the context of this command. The context of this command is, God is working in you to will and to do. This will put you and pressurize you to live with the consciousness of God working in you. Why did this problem come in my life? Why did this situation come in my life? It is because God has brought this situation, because he is working in me to will and to do. There is a purpose that God has brought. Only when you have consciousness of that, you will stop grumbling. This command will actually make you to live with more God consciousness. May God help us to learn these lessons.